Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'm a huge fan of Mike Adams. Some accuse him of exaggeration, but I think more often than right, he gets it spot on. Here's for us who have been wondering why Arizona has become such a big deal, why they have so blatantly stolen the election, why when there were only 17% of Democrats turned out on Election Day, they nevertheless, Katie Hobbs, the Democrat candidate, who didn't campaign, didn't debate, has no following, and abused her position as Secretary of State to supervise an election where she herself was a candidate, should have been put in that position. I think Mike may have sorted it out. Catch this. Why globalists desperately need control of Arizona before they unleash the next staged pandemic. In today's situation update, I explain why globalists desperately need control over Arizona. The next stage of their plan is to have Joe Biden sign the World Health Organization pandemic treaty, which will be followed by the release of an engineered pandemic we've already established can be staged by dispersing chemical weapons on any given city, accompanied by media hysteria claiming an outbreak. Once the invisible virus scourge is declared, which no one can verify because you can't see viruses and can't ask any questions without being censored, but WHO will declare a health emergency and order nations and states to start locking down, China style, under the direction of WHO. Masks, vaccine, quarantines, and lockdowns can all be mandated regardless of local laws. Foreign military occupation of the U.S. would be resisted if it were carried out by foreign soldiers in military uniform. But the American people will put up with all kinds of tyranny as long as the soldiers are dressed in biohazard suits and the actions are painted as public health emergencies. So listen to what Mike has to say here, because I think he's got it right.
Hello, All right, welcome. Managed to do a recording here for the situation update for Tuesday, November 29th, 2022. However, I did have to cancel my guest, and we have scheduled him to come back on a future date, so that's my fault. I apologize to my guest for that. But here's today's topic. The Civil War in America begins in Arizona. And I don't even mean that it begins right now. It's just that Arizona is about to be certified for Katie Hobbs as the governor. It's obvious theft, totally illegal. Everything was rigged. Obviously, Katie Hobbs, conflict of interest, running the voting system, rigging everything, shutting down the machines on voting day to hurt conservatives. 291,000 something votes for Carrie Lake have just vanished, just disappeared. So yeah, the whole thing is rigged. But why? Why? The answer is because they had to have a George Soros-funded governor in charge, that's Katie Hobbs, for the coming pandemic, because they need to be able to force lockdowns, quarantines, and exterminations of conservatives during this pandemic. Now, that's what's coming. And Alex Jones pointed some of this out in his show yesterday. I thought it was a brilliant analysis. He said, look, the people of the world, if they saw UN blue helmets, thugs with machine guns and battle gear coming up to them, taking them away, or locking them up, the people would fight back. But what if it's health workers with guns, with health authority? What if it's in the middle of a, quote, pandemic or a, quote, outbreak, and they're not dressed in battle gear necessarily. They're dressed in the, the personal protective equipment type of stuff, the face respirators and so on. Suddenly it's a health emergency. That's how they're going to accomplish this. And Arizona is going to be a state now because Katie Hobbs is being installed illegally, but she's going to be the, quote, governor. She's being installed in order to have the health assassination squads go out and target and arrest and isolate and exterminate conservatives or dissidents or anyone who disagrees with the government. So Arizona is going to be the battleground. And the reason I say that is because the people of Arizona are conservative. The people of Arizona are heavily armed. The people of Arizona will not put up with being locked down and exterminated and thrown into COVID camps to be never heard from again. So the conflict is coming there for sure. Whereas in states like Texas, the governor being a Republican, Governor Abbott, and his Attorney General Ken Paxton, they won't even try that level of lockdown. And nor will DeSantis in Florida, nor will you see this in Oklahoma or Missouri or Louisiana, a bunch of other states. But you will see it now in Arizona. I don't mean now, I mean you will see it when the pandemic is released in Arizona because of events happening now, which is, of course, election theft and the installation of Katie Hobbs. So this is going to be ground zero for civil war in America, I believe. And with Katie Hobbs there, by the way, there is no path for any GOP president to ever be elected in America ever again. Without Arizona, you can't win. And so with Katie Hobbs in charge, Arizona is going to join Oregon, Washington, California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, and so on. States that just flat out agree to rig every election. They will cheat. They will print ballots. They will lose votes. They will do whatever is necessary in the next presidential election. And that's why it was so critical that Carrie Lake won this election in Arizona, because we need Arizona in order to have a Republican president. There will not be a Republican president as long as Katie Hobbs is in power in Arizona, okay? So just bank on that. Now then, what's coming before 2024's election, by the way, what's coming is the next stage of the pandemic. There's going to be a big release of something bigger than COVID, something scarier than COVID, something that panics people, even people who are probably hard to scare because they've lived through COVID. And so many Americans now know that that was all BS. The media scare campaign didn't really hold water. A lot of people know now the vaccines don't work, the masks don't work, the lockdowns were useless. It was all theater. So something's coming that's going to scare people out of that theater. And this means they have to release something that is truly, truly deadly. And it doesn't have to be a virus, by the way. It could be, and we've talked about these possibilities before, it could be aerosolized venom peptides or other toxic poisons, lots of chemical weapons that could be released in certain cities in order to fake a pandemic outbreak, like VX nerve gas, for example. And some of the symptoms of VX nerve gas really resemble these people who appear to go into some kind of tremors, and then they spin around and then they die, apparently from the vaccine. But, you know, VX nerve gas looks a whole lot like that, by the way. People start shaking and tremoring, and then they lose nervous system control, and they're dead. You know, they collapse and die. So there are many other toxins. Again, no virus is necessary for a so-called pandemic outbreak to be staged. And it can be staged in every major city. It can be staged in Phoenix, especially when you have some criminal like Katie Hobbs in charge, running that operation there with the help of the globalists like George Soros and his money and so on. So think about all of the Democrat-controlled cities in America. That's where they can set up the outbreak. Whether it's real or fake doesn't matter. They can show images of people bleeding out of their eyeballs or dropping dead in the middle of the street. And they can use that then to declare a pandemic emergency. Now, what they're waiting on for this, by the way, is the World Health Organization COVID treaty or pandemic treaty. It applies to more than COVID, so really it's the new pandemic treaty. And that interview was, what, 10 days ago or something? You can go back and check that interview. That treaty is going to be signed by Joe Biden sometime in early 2023. That treaty gives the World Health Organization total control over the local response to any kind of a health emergency, meaning the WHO can order your local county, your town, your city, your state, into forced vaccinations, forced quarantines, lockdowns, masks, social distancing, anything they want. And this treaty, if Joe Biden signs it, takes away the national sovereignty of the United States. According to Dr. Boyle, by the way, he's the expert. He wrote the bioterrorism prevention treaty, or was it, that was signed by Reagan in 1989, I believe. He wrote it. He's the author. He's an expert in treaties. And he told me specifically in that interview that the language of this treaty, so-called treaty, is designed to usurp the sovereignty of both the United States of America at the federal level and also at the state level. It's designed that way. So even states won't be able to say no to this, you know, legally, although some states will resist it. So let's say Florida, Texas, and other conservative states say, no, we're not going to follow that. Go pound sand. But you can bet Arizona, under criminal Katie Hobbs, is going to say, yep, you're all locked down now. We're going to destroy the economy. We're going to shut you down. And if you disagree, we're going to come take you away. You'll never be heard from again. That's coming. The final act is coming. This is the final act slash the final solution. You know what that means? It's coming. And it's coming before Election Day of 2024. You see, Democrats are not afraid of another election. They've already rigged the two they needed to rig to put enough people in power to carry out the mass extermination program that they've been wanting to do all along. So they don't worry about 2024. There is no 2024 that matters in their minds. They're going to carry out mass extermination across the country long before then. And this is the mechanism that I'm explaining of how they're going to do that. And it starts with a pandemic or some kind of staged outbreak, some kind of pandemic theater, whatever it looks like, followed by forced lockdowns, forced quarantines, and then all the, you know, the medical suited up men with guns under health authorities, i.e. the WHO, coming in and taking you away and murdering you and millions of people across America. So mass murders will begin with the next great outbreak that is being planned. And they're just going to murder you in the name of public health, public safety, you see. It's the new fascism, I guess. It's the new Holocaust. They're going to kill you while claiming they're saving you. Now, you notice the globalists are running out of time. Mass uprisings in China right now. The CCP is about to lose control. This is way bigger than Tiananmen Square, 1989. Way bigger. China's about to be toppled because, well, they've abused their citizens for so long with the lockdowns and the isolation and the slave labor and the organ harvesting and everything else you can imagine, their people are rising up. The military is rising up in Brazil with the people over that rigged election. There are protests in European countries. There have been over the last few months in Germany, in France, in Spain, in the UK, and other countries. And there's a lot more coming over this winter, of course, because of the energy outages and the food scarcity and the power grid failures, everything. Going to be a lot of protests. The globalists have realized they are running out of time. They just lost their FTX crypto slush fund operation, and they're losing some key decisions at the U.S. Supreme Court level as well, such as decisions on the Second Amendment. The globalists are losing the consent of the people because people are tired of being scammed through the CDC, through the FDA, through COVID, through, you know, everything we've just been through, the vaccines and all of it. And there are some positive forces in the world and some patriotic people who are working diligently to expose the corruption, the cabal, the pedophiles. I mean, look at what's been coming out recently on, you know, elite child trafficking and pedophilia. Even Tucker Carlson is covering this. Look at the Balenciaga ad campaign, or however you pronounce that company. That news about that is exploding everywhere. It's way worse than what you've seen. People are increasingly waking up about the rigged financial system. A lot more people are getting into gold and silver or other alternative currencies. Crypto, well, there was an attempted collapse of the crypto space, but they haven't killed it off yet. And the core technology may yet be applied to some decentralized solutions that could run as competitors to the dollar in the long run. And so the globalists are totally freaking out, and they're now desperately trying to seize control. They know they need a financial collapse. They need a massive pandemic. They know they need control over the key states, the key governorships, and so on, and key senators. That's why they rigged it against Oz and rigged it against Blake Masters in Arizona and so on. And this is why they rigged it in Brazil. So again, the final act is almost here. And I believe it's going to happen in 2023. Although, for the record, my predictions do tend to come too early. Things tend to take a little bit longer to play out than I anticipated. But as soon as the WHO treaty is signed, that's when we should start to really watch for the next pandemic to be released, because they need that false authority of that so-called treaty in order to enforce all this, lock everybody down, and engage in the final destruction of the economic system, force everybody into mass starvation, then collapse the currency at the same time. And once the currency is collapsed, then they would try to force people onto a universal basic income through a digital wallet system. On that system, of course, they would exercise total control, because that's called programmable money. It's centrally controlled by the central bank or the treasury. You would not have any freedom from that point forward. You would be a slave to their system. They would know everything you bought. They'd be able to control what you buy or limit it. They could say you can't use this digital currency to purchase ammo, for example, or anything, alcohol, gasoline, a home. They could say you're only allowed to buy food and only this much. You know, they could put quotas into your wallet system, which is exactly why they want total control over your digital finances, right? So all of this is about to happen very quickly. Sometime next year is what it looks like. Now, the people who are going to be insulated from this will be the people who have what I've been calling off-grid resources in all of these areas. So off-grid food is both stored food, but also seeds and sprouting and the ability to grow your own food. Off-grid money is gold and silver, or items that you can barter relatively easily. It could be some supplies of ammunition, for example, or even a piece of land, although land is not really that liquid. Gold and silver are very, very liquid. I've talked about off-grid medicine, you know, backup emergency medicine. Get yourself some emergency antibiotics, for example. Make sure you've got ivermectin. Make sure you have iodine and antiseptics and things like that. Backup communications, you know, satellite phones, I've talked about, satellite text messaging devices like the Bivy Stick and things like that. Or terrestrial radios that don't have a monthly fee. You're just, you know, little Baofeng radios that are pretty cheap and you can use within, I don't know, a mile or something locally, depending on how powerful those are. The thing is, those radios are pretty easy to triangulate and track down. So using them gives away your position. You know, just make sure you are aware of that. But the people they're going to be able to force into the camps, those will be the people who had no backup supplies, people who had no real money, no gold and silver, no extra food, you know, no extra shelter. They don't own their home. They're paying rent. They're behind on everything. They owe a lot of money on their credit cards. They live paycheck to paycheck and so on. Those people will be trapped and forced into the new digital currency system, a Mark of the Beast system. And in that Mark of the Beast system, you will be a slave to Satan. In fact, New Patriot, who I've interviewed, he's got a great channel on Brightown.com. New Patriot, I had a great piece about that in the last day or so, talking about the Mark of the Beast system. You can reject it, but they, the powers that be, they're going to make your life a living hell. They're going to make it difficult for you to buy groceries, or difficult to survive. They will destroy your currency, that is your dollars, in a bank account. But they will probably give you some kind of a trade-in where you don't lose most of it if you go into the digital wallet system and you agree to have the mark upon your palm. You agree to the Mark of the Beast system, then you'll be able to keep your dollars. They'll just be converted into digital dollars. If you don't agree to the Mark of the Beast system, you lose all the dollars in the banking system. That's how they're going to do this. And actually, I think that was a really great job there by New Patriot pointing that out. You're going to wake up one day and there's going to be an announcement. All the banks are frozen. But don't worry, all your deposits are safe. They're just being converted into a digital wallet system. And all you have to do is sign up and give us your iris scan, give us your thumbprint, give us your blood sample, your anal swab, your nasal sample, whatever, you know, all the crazy things they're going to ask for. And then you can have your money. Look, here it is. It's fine. It's in the digital realm now. We saved it for you. And then, boom, you've sold your soul. The minute you even sign up for that system, God cannot save you. I mean, this is mentioned in the Bible. If you sign up for the Mark of the Beast system, you sell your soul to Satan in that moment. And so those of us who plan to resist that system, we understand that we will lose every dollar that's in the bank when this day comes, whatever day that is, March 13th of 2023 or whatever it is, March 17th. I wonder what's going to happen on those days. That'll be interesting. But that day is coming. And you need to know that the only way to survive this is to have backup supplies. Now, with that in mind, I'll mention today's sponsor, which is the Gold and Silver Company, the Treasure Island Precious Metals and Coins Company. That's
now, Mike goes on to, of course, he promotes supplies and all that. But the point is, I think he's got it exactly right. This is why Arizona is such a focal point. We know that Carrie Lake is not going to quit. We also know the certification by corrupt election officials has proceeded forward. It's just outrageous. The Arizona election has been certified by Arizona election officials, and the Republican candidate for governor reacted, saying she's going to continue her fight for election integrity and preparing people. They'll be shocked by what she has discovered. One independent journalist who was live on the scene for the past month wrote about his reflections as well after seeing what he called a rigged and conflict-ridden process. Today, Maricopa County certified its rotten election despite hours of witness testimony of wrongdoing and an extremely flawed election in the public comment portion of their meeting. Jordan Conradson reported for Gateway Pundit points of conflict as he sees them. Conflict number one. Katie Hobbs refused to recuse herself from election oversight as Secretary of State in her own election for governor. Conflict number two. Maricopa County Supervisor Steve Gallardo served as the co-chair of the Latinos for Katie Hobbs Coalition and is now a member of Hobbs' transition team. Conflict number three, Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richter, who oversaw early voting, founded and operated the pro-democracy Republicans PAC, a dark money PAC, aimed at eliminating candidates with a mega agenda. Conflict four, Maricopa County Chairman Bill Gates, not the guy we know who oversaw the election on Election Day, openly rooted against Trump endorsed candidates, calling their win in the primaries a catastrophe and saying, I think they are electable, which is frightening. Conflict 5. Katie Hobbs threatened to sue any county that did not certify the election and hand her the governorship. She is moving forward with a lawsuit against Cochise County for delaying certification, and I applaud Cochise County. Bill Gates and Stephen Richter also started an ad by Never Trump Group to discredit auditors of Maricopa County's 2020 election and attack supporters of the audit, like Trump-endorsed Republican candidates. Let me add, by the way, in order for that World Health Organization treaty to become binding, it has to be ratified by the United States Senate, and that requires 60 votes, as I understand, or perhaps even 66, two-thirds of the Senate is going to have to ratify. That's going to be a pretty tough call, pretty hard to bring about. And I'm hoping, you know, it would have a hell of a problem, I think, getting the number of Republicans they need, even if they have, you know, 51 senators, and I'm hoping Herschel Walker is going to win in Georgia. He deserves, but they're rigging that election just as they're rigging all the rest. Remember, Newt Gingrich was predicting a pickup of 5 Senate seats for the GOP and 45 or 50 seats. James Carville acknowledged that they saved 57 seats for the Democrats in the House, meaning that they stole 57 seats. And that's not really exaggerated as to what one would have expected, given all the poll results, Hispanics moving to the right, Catholics moving to the right, suburban women moving to the right, because even Barack Obama in his first midterm lost 63. We'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help.
first insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we got a serious development, too, before the Supreme Court. Kerry Cassidy has done a very interesting interview about a Supreme Court case, and I verified that it is on the docket. Number 22, that would be the year, 380, Roland J. Brunson petitioner versus Alma S. Adams et al., meaning, of course, and others. A Supreme Court case has surfaced, and as of last Friday, has been added to the court's emergency docket. This is dated the 26th. The case involves a possible removal of a sitting president and vice president of the United States, along with 388 members of the United States Congress. Respondents were properly warned and were requested to make an investigation into a highly covert, swift, and powerful enemy seeking to destroy the Constitution of the United States of America. The case alleges that Congress failed in its constitutional duty by ignoring the protection of critical infrastructure election systems during a national emergency. U.S. courts have consistently held that fraud vitiates everything. The classic case being U.S. versus Throckmorton of 1878. The refusal of the respondents to investigate the congressional claim, the enemy, is an act of treason and fraud by respondents. The successful manipulation of U.S. elections constitutes an act of war. She includes aspects of her interview with Loy Brunson regarding this case, where the defendants include Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and 388 members of the House and the Senate from the lawsuit. On January 6, 2021, The 117th Congress held a proceeding and debate in Washington, D.C., hereafter known as proceeding. Proceeding was for the purpose of counting votes under the 2020 presidential election for the President and Vice President of the United States under Amendment 12. During this proceeding, over 100 members of U.S. Congress claimed factual evidence that the said election was rigged. The refusal of respondents to investigate this congressional claim, the enemy, is an act of treason. Here's another. Due to the fact that this case represents a national security breach on an unprecedented level, like never before seen, seriously damaging and violating Brunson, and coincidentally affecting every citizen of the U.S. in courts of law, and voting is the greatest power an individual can exercise in a republic. It is Brunson's personal voice and the way he can protect his personal constitutional protected rights and the U.S. Constitution. When the allegations of a rigged election came forward, respondents had a duty under law to investigate it or be removed from office. Again, it is an incontestable fact that the respondents committed fraud and treason, breaching our national security, as factually alleged in Brunson's complaint, thus adhering to a domestic enemy that continues to breach our national security at an alarming rate on a daily basis. This national security breach is having the same end result as an act of war, to place into power whom the respondents want, which is Biden. Brunson moves this court with his powers to order the trial court of this case to immediately grant to Brunson the damages he seeks in his complaint. This is necessary to immediately secure our national security without any further delay. Here are some additional notes from Kerry herself. Considering this case deals with a breach of national security and possible treason by those named, there must be limits to the defense of immunity on behalf of the defendants when immunity does not include breach of national security or treason. Here's more. Regarding Supreme Court Case 22-380, Brunson versus Adams, it alleges that the 2020 election was rigged and listed defendants, 94 U.S. state senators, 129 members of the House of Representatives. I think that really means, well, it says state senators. I think it probably means U.S. senators, because remember, the states have their own Senate, so there are state senators. I think this is meant to be United States senators from the various states. Joseph R. Biden and Kamala Harris, as well as former Vice President Mike Pence, in a conspiracy to defraud the United States and Mr. Brunson by rigging or allowing to be rigged the 2020 election process. It calls for, among other things, removal of 94 senators, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, as well as over 100 members of the House of Representatives, for being part of the conspiracy to rig the 2020 election and overthrow the duly elected leader, President of the United States. Here's a question. All submissions to the court for a writ of certiorari, as is this, as is mine, have to stipulate the question the court is being asked to address. Here is their formulation of questions. A serious conflict exists between decisions rendered from this court and lower appeal courts, along with constitutional provisions and statutes, in deciding whether or not the trial court has jurisdiction to try the merits of this case. This case uncovers a serious national security breach that is unique, and it is of first impression, and due to the seriousness of this case, it involves a possible removal of a sitting president and vice president of the United States, along with members of the United States Congress, while deeming them unfit from ever holding office under federal, state, county, or local governments found within the United States of America. And at the same time, the trial court also has the authority to be validated by this court to authorize the swearing in of the legal and rightful heirs for president and vice president of the United States. In addition, There are two doctrines that conflict with each other, found in this case affecting every court in this country. These doctrines are known as the doctrine of equitable maxim and the doctrine of the object principle of justice. Equitable maxim, created by this court, which the lower courts used to dismiss in this case, sets in direct violation of the object principle of justice, also partially created by this court and supported by other appeal courts and constitutional provisions. These conflicts call for the supervisory power of this court to resolve these conflicts, which has not but should be settled by this court without delay. Now, as I see it, none of those statements actually is a question, and yet you're supposed to be posing it as though it were a question. I have verified on the docket. I'm looking right now at the docket. The case has been docketed. It is on the docket, but I do not see that it's been sent to conference. Now, my own case has been sent to conference, which will occur this Friday. So on Friday, my case, Fetzer v. Posner, will be reviewed by the United States Supreme Court. And hopefully, the court will, there will be at least four justices who believe that the issues that I raise are of sufficient significance that they warrant consideration by the court, which I most certainly want to see happen here. Let me just give you a contrast of how I formulated my question, so you'll see the difference between how it was done there. I mean, this is all, here's my question presented. Because remember, what motivated mine is that I was denied the right to a jury trial to resolve the disputed facts. In other words, the plaintiff in this case, who calls himself Leonard Posner, brought a lawsuit against me for purported defamation by statements in a book I had edited and published and partially authored, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, asserting in the book that a death certificate that he had shared with my research colleague Kelly Watt and others by publishing on his Google Plus page for Noah Posner, whom he declares to be his son, was fake. When I observed that it had no file number, it had no town or state certification, and it really was fake on its face. A parallel, just to get you a sense of it, would be that of a driver's license that had no driver's license number or driver's state stamp on it. No one would think that a driver's license with no driver's license number or stamp on it would be an authentic death certificate. And yet that was a claim made by the plaintiff's attorney, who asserted that a second death certificate, which had a file number, handwritten file number, town and state certification in the complaint, was not materially different from the one that I had published. When, of course, the presence or absence of a file number, of a town certification, of a state certification, are all materially relevant. That means materially relevant to the legal issues involved here. So they were claiming that an incomplete death certificate with no file number and no state or town certification was the same as, from a legal point of view, a death certificate that had a file number, a state and town certification. Now, mind you, I'm only describing the case. I'm not here making a reassertion of the claim for which I was sued, because the court has imposed a permanent injunction against my reaffirming those claims for which I was found liable for defamation. Now, if the court reverses, then I would be exempt from that constraint. So I'm simply describing that in addition, I had the reports of two forensic document experts who examined both of those death certificates and two others that had been introduced that had been independently obtained, one by Dave Gaharry, who's a publisher of Moonrock Books, which owned the copyright on the various editions of the book, apart from the very first, obtained from the town, which had a partially printed file number. And it wasn't even the same as the handwritten file number on the other three versions, because I also obtained an additional copy from the state. Now, each of these four different versions were different. One might think on its face that having four different versions of a death certificate for the same child, the same purported decedent, where, by the way, it says right on the death certificate in any of these versions that the decedent died at Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds, one would think that creates a presumption of fakery and fraud because all four of them are different. Indeed, I even solicited the reports of two forensic document examiners who concluded that all four of the death certificates were fake. Now, I'm not asserting that, again, as I explained, because I'm under this legal injunction. But the fact is, I had two forensic document experts conclude that all four of those death certificates were fake. How could I not prevail? Well, it turns out that in Wisconsin, they have a peculiar summary judgment procedure that allows the judge, on the basis of his own subjective opinion, to decide what evidence, claims, facts are reasonable and what are not. In other words, he could exercise his own prerogative to decide which of the evidence or facts or claims are reasonable, and if he finds them to be unreasonable, he can simply set them aside and treat them as though they did not exist. Now, it's absolutely crucial here, because if there are bona fide disputed facts, if one party is asserting that he lost a son at Sandy Hook, for which he is purporting to have a death certificate, and the other party is reporting that nobody died at Sandy Hook, that was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control, and therefore any death certificate for purported victims would have to be fake, a jury would be required to resolve the dispute. A judge cannot do that in an ordinary summary judgment, but in Wisconsin, there's this peculiarity that the judge can merely set aside or declare to be unreasonable the evidence of one party or another to make it turn out that there are no disputed facts, because a summary judgment is supposed to only entail the application of the law by the court because there are no disputed facts. There's no necessity for a jury trial. Well, one could hardly imagine a more blatant divergence over the facts than mine with Leonard Posner, where he's asserting somebody died at Sandy Hook, to wit, his son, and I'm asserting nobody died at Sandy Hook, including his son, and where the evidence he asserts to be in his support, a death certificate, is disputed in its authenticity, and where I not only introduced into evidence four different versions, but reports of two different forensic document examiners who conclude that all four of them are fake. Again, I reassert, I'm not saying that they are. I'm saying that was the report of the two forensic document examiners as I recount the case. So the judge ruled there were no disputed facts. He just set them all aside because in his subjective opinion, they were unreasonable. I mean, think about it. This is ridiculous. I've got all this evidence, and I had a massive evidence, you know, not only the FEMA manual for the exercise, but all kinds of evidence, reports from the day corresponding to what you'd expect from a FEMA exercise, including a portable sign saying everyone must check in. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in with a controller upon arrival. Porta potties already in place. That's astonishing. I've consulted various legal law enforcement experts, and they've never heard of porta potties at a crime scene, but they were there at Sandy Hook. Pizza and bottled water at the firehouse. I don't think anyone's ever heard of handing out pizza and bottled water at a real bona fide crime scene either. Of course, there are many wearing name tags on lanyards, which is how FEMA identifies the key players. Color-coded name tags on lanyards. Parents, we're bringing children to the scene. What parent is going to bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre? So as I was laying all this out, you know, in my various submissions and briefs, and the court was simply declaring all my evidence to be unreasonable. Unreasonable. I thought this was ridiculous, and I submitted to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals for the 4th District. And would you believe they sided with a circuit court judge that he had acted perfectly properly in setting aside all of my evidence. They actually had consecutive paragraphs in their rejection of my motion for reversal. One of which said, it's reasonable to believe that Adam Lanza shot his mother and then went to San Diego and shot 20 kids and 6 adults, even cites Neil Haslund claiming I held my son in my arms, ignoring the fact that Wayne Garver had asserted the parents weren't allowed to come into contact with their children, which means one or the other has to be wrong. They can't both be right. But they can both be wrong, which, of course, I'm asserting because it was actually a FEMA drill. And then in the second following paragraph, they said it's unreasonable to believe this was a FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control. I mean, right there, the 4th Court of Appeals for Wisconsin could not have put it more baldly. And in my petition for a writ to the U.S. Supreme Court, because I went up to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin and they denied my, you know, reviewing my petition. Well, I had a lot of conversation about summary judgment with a dear friend in Texas who's actually been involved in numerous summary judgments by the name of Ron Avery. And Ron thought the situation here was ridiculous because of the Texas, you'd have to assume everything that the defendant asserts. You'd have to assume nobody died at San Diego. It was a FEMA drill. Assume my evidence, a FEMA manual, blah, blah, blah. All is true and accurate. And then ask the plaintiff whether he agrees. And only if he agrees are there no disputed facts and can a summary judgment go forward. Otherwise, it must go to a jury for trial. So I recognize reviewing the criteria for submission to the United States Supreme Court, the conflicts between the highest courts of different states is a reason for a Supreme Court to take a case under consideration. Another would be that it's a politically significant case, that it's a publicly, publicly significant case. And since it involves Sandy Hook and the right to a trial by jury and summary judgment, obviously it's a legally significant case because we have this conflict over summary judgment is still being applied improperly to residents of Wisconsin. So thousands of summary judgments are being rendered under a defective rule. And that it entailed, a correction of an error here, to wit, the court not allowing all my evidence to be heard and entered in. I mean, actually, in a technical sense, it was entered, but then it was ignored because it wasn't found to be reasonable. I even got the book, Nobody Died in a Sandy Hook, entered into evidence at the end of the oral hearing where he declared that I'd committed defamation. So this is a perfect case for the Supreme Court, in my opinion. Here's my question presented, which is really only one. May rules of summary judgment vary throughout the states, allowing the Wisconsin judiciary to conduct and affirm a non-jury trial, meaning it's a trial where facts are adjudicated but without a jury, under the pretense of a summary judgment proceeding, the process of which violates all of the rules of summary judgment in Texas, depriving Wisconsin citizens of their equal rights to a trial by jury and due process under the 7th and 14th Amendments, and further allowing a Wisconsin judge to determine the validity of major national events through unsound summary judgment methodology. And I got to say, that's just a superb formulation of the question put before the United States Supreme Court. And now, because of an unusual set of circumstances, I've been able to supplement the evidence I had at the original petition with evidence newly acquired that explains how this is also legally significant, because the Supreme Court, through a peculiar set of historical circumstances, has never actually affirmed that the Seventh Amendment, the right to a trial by jury, applies to all 50 states, even though it's made that determination for the other 9 of the first 10 amendments. So there's a unique opportunity. As a retired professor of law put to me, he liked my idea of subsuming the 7th under the 14th, which asserts equal justice to all citizens of the United States. So in essence, what we're talking about is the fact that every American is a dual citizen. They're a citizen of their state, but they're also a citizen of the United States. And as citizens of the United States under the 14th Amendment, they're entitled to equal justice under law. That the procedure in Wisconsin is extraordinary because it deprives me of the right to a trial by jury. And here's a unique opportunity for the court to affirm it, which has led the State of the Nation. This is a wonderful journal, internet publication, to declare that this case, speaking of mine, may be the most important issue ever placed before the United States Supreme Court in our lifetime. Think about it. I was so affected that State of the Nation would make that declaration. This may be the most important issue presented to the United States Supreme Court in our lifetime, because it has to do with the application of a trial by jury to determine the facts, which we've all thought was fundamental to the American judicial system, but which has been lost completely in Wisconsin. I'm told also in Massachusetts it's similar, and there's even a federal review board that uses a similar summary judgment procedure, all of which need to be rectified. Right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me just add that the appendices to my case before the Supreme Court, which you cannot directly download from the docket, that's, I think, because they're so significant, include the FEMA manual for the exercise, which is Appendix B, but also the Connecticut State FEMA agenda, their schedule showing they had the exercise L-366 for Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012, right on their schedule, published public schedule right there. I've got that for the Supreme Court. I've also included as Appendix D what I regard as the single most telling photograph of this crime scene investigative vehicle in the parking lot, where you can see just above the roof of the vehicle a string of four windows in classroom 10 that are not shot out, but would be after the event. So therefore, since they're not shot out, you can see the vehicles there before the event has occurred, even though there's crime scene tape up, or if the crime has officially already occurred, they simply haven't finished fabricating the evidence yet. Either way, it's damning. That is Appendix D. And if you thought that was a topper, how about Appendix E? A licensed private investigator in Texas, Brian Davidson, extremely solid guy, has been going through the photos in the Connecticut State Police files, their archives on Sandy Hook. And he's comparing the photographs they have in their archives with their own official report, including, for example, that in a hallway, there's supposed to be two bodies, Don Hawkspring, the principal, and Mary Sherlock, the school psychologist, lying in pools of blood. Well, there are the photographs of the hallway. And guess what? No Don Hawkswing, no Mary Sherlock, no bodies, not even any blood. No pools of blood. It has photographs in the archives that Connecticut State Police contradict and refute the official report that Connecticut State Police gave because they were deeply involved in this. I've been forced to conclude they were running the op behind the scene. And in addition, he has photographs inside one of the classrooms where you'd expect to see bodies of kids and blood all over the place. And not only are there no bodies of kids or blood all over the place, none, not a speck, but there aren't even any student desks and chairs. There's no teacher desk. There's no American flag. In other words, what he has not only substantiates that there was no mass shooting at Sandy Hook, but that it wasn't even an operating school. And guess what? They removed all the metadata from their photographs. They removed all the metadata from their photographs, which obviously reflects consciousness of guilt. They don't want anyone to know when and where those photographs were taken. They're hoping that invalidates their use as evidence in courts of law, but the fact they've removed the metadata is evidence of consciousness of guilt. And the fact that the content of the photographs contradicts the official narratives of the Connecticut State Police is staggering, staggering, staggering. Elon Musk has restored my account on Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. And some, Kim.com and others, who would like to get Alex Jones back on, have petitioned him to do that, saying, look, you've even reinstated at Jim Fetzer, who actually edited, but they say authored a book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Because Musk has responded saying about, you know, having no toleration for those who benefit from the murder of children. And when I saw this exchange, I actually tweeted to Musk and said, Alex had done nothing wrong. I said, here's a photograph of Noah Posner. This is, of course, the subject of the death certificate over which I was sued. Here's a photograph of Noah Posner celebrating his 8th birthday. Pretty good for a kid who died at the age of 6. And it included a photograph of Noah celebrating his birthday at the age of 8. It's right there on Twitter. You can find it. Now, Elon Musk has not restored Alex, but I certainly think Alex is entitled to be restored. I'm certainly glad that Trump has been restored. And I do believe it's going to be more difficult to pull off the kind of shit they've been pulling off on the American people if you actually have a bastion of freedom of speech, as Twitter appears to be restored to its former role here. I'm very happy about what Musk has been doing with Twitter so far. Meanwhile, let me say more about the Katie Hobbs, Kerry Lake, Arizona situation. The Gateway Pundit and the Conservative Treehouse are two simply excellent outlets. So is Zero Hedge. We're getting accurate reporting. Now, I've gone through with you, five conflicts of interest that Katie Hobbs didn't recuse herself and was supervising her own election, that the Maricopa County supervisor was a co-chair of Latinos for Katie Hobbs, obviously another conflict of interest, that the recorder oversaw early voting was a founder of a Republican PAC concerned to eliminate candidates who support Trump, of a mega agenda, and that the Maricopa County Chairman Bill Gates openly rooted against Trump-endorsed candidates, calling their win in the primaries a catastrophe, and that Katie Hobbs threatened to sue any county that didn't certify the election. I mean, this is just grotesque. The theft going on here before our very eyes is so blatant. It's mind-boggling. These are the same people who oversaw the uncertifiable disaster that occurred on Election Day, where voting machines and printers suddenly stopped working the moment polls opened. Republican voters were forced to wait in extremely long lines, turned away from the polls, or told to deposit their ballots in box 3 for misread ballots. And I'm convinced those were just trash bags, box 3. The Gateway Pundit reported Democrats had only 17% of the turnout on Election Day, and yet they got over half of the recorded votes. The Arizona Attorney General's office has even outlined potential law violations in wrongdoing in a recent letter to Maricopa County, which deflected the blame and told the Attorney General to pound sand. They actually moved up a meeting to have been held at 9:30, where the Attorney General's office was asking for these records in response to 8 a.m. to go forward with a corrupt theft of an election. I mean, this is grotesque. As the Gateway Pundit reported last week, Carrie Lake dropped her first lawsuit against corrupt election officials and indicated that more lawsuits were coming. According to the statute, certification must happen before the lawsuits can be forwarded. In other words, you can't bring a suit for fraud on an election until the election has been certified. And yet you have some judges who will rule, well, if you were going to contest this certification, you had to do it before it was certified. Obviously, by being on both sides of the position, they can make any argument they want. The question is, do we have judges and courts in the United States today that will do the right thing? In my opinion, we have a couple of nice test cases before the United States Supreme Court, including, as it happens, my own. But mine isn't important because I'm involved. Mine is important because citizens of Wisconsin are being deprived equal justice under the law, which are afforded under the 14th Amendment as citizens of the United States by virtue of Wisconsin having a perverse summary judgment procedure that violates the 7th Amendment right to a trial by jury in the case of disputed facts, by permitting the judge to resolve disputed facts on the basis of his own subjective opinion. I mean, this is grotesque. And if the court does not, if the court rejects my petition, it's going to be a signal that the judicial system from bottom to top is incapable of dealing with politically explosive issues. And therefore, the whole rationale for its existence comes into question. I think this is a real test case. Now, Brunson obviously looks like a beauty too, but frankly, from what I've seen so far, I don't think they have their questions properly formatted. They're not even in the form of questions. And there may be an issue of standing, though I would like to believe that this being a voter, American citizen, has standing. I don't think it's a slam dunk. It has to be sent to conference. During the conference, where mine will be reviewed this Friday, day after tomorrow, I need at least four, as with anyone in that position, justices to vote to have it heard before the entire Supreme Court. That entails issuing a writ of certiorari. I don't know anyone who's reviewed my case who does not believe that it deserves a writ of certiorari, but our opinions don't matter. The only opinions that do matter are those of the nine justices who sit on the Supreme Court. Now, I have been told by a source in a position to know that all of these Sandy Hook cases have had predetermined conclusions. I mean, all the cases involving Alex Jones, James Tracy, actually his was an internal university, but it had all kinds of fishy aspects. They were giving him the boot. Wolfgang Halbig, the Remington case, that they all had predetermined conclusions, and presumably that includes my own, that all of the courts, up to and through the Supreme Courts of the land, including, of course, the Court of Appeals for the Fourth District and the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, according to this source, knew how they were going to rule before the case was even considered. But that this is not true of the United States Supreme Court. So in a way, it may be this is the first time, the only occasion on which a Sandy Hook case receives due consideration within a court of law. And I dare say this would be another reason why State of the Nation may have got it exactly right by suggesting this may be the most important issue or case to come before the Supreme Court in our lifetime. And by the way, you can download those appendices to your own desktop. You can go to my jameshfetzer.org blog and look for a press release. Just do a search on press release, or do a search on Ron Avery, or do a search on Fetzer v. Posner. And of course, all the other cases heretofore were Posner v. Fetzer. Now it's Fetzer v. Posner, press release. And you will see that you can access the petition before the court from which I read you the question that my case poses for the court's consideration. But you can also download my petition for a rehearing and the supporting appendices. You can have it all right on your desktop. And I dare say you're going to find it astonishing that this kind of evidence hasn't been before a court in the past. But it was, actually, because I presented it to the court right here in Wisconsin. But because of the perverse summary judgment procedures, it was simply set aside as unreasonable. In none of the other cases did it go that far. All the other cases were resolved on the basis of stipulation or agreement or default. Remember, I personally sought to intervene in all three of the Alex Jones cases and in the Remington trial. I sought to intervene to make the point that there's never been a judicial determination that anyone died at Sandy Hook, that all the cases, or any cases, have only been decided on procedural grounds. And I make that point to the United States Supreme Court. So are we going to let, you know, media narratives about what happened and events be treated as though they were real if there's a mountain of evidence that contradicts them? This is another reason why State of the Union regards this case as so significant. I sought to intervene, and I was not only rejected by the plaintiffs, the fake Sandy Hook parents. I mean, that was unsurprising. I was also rejected by the defendants, even Remington. The insurance companies prefer to shell out $73 million rather than allow a Sandy Hook expert to come in and testify about all the evidence that it had been a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. And when you got a 400-plus page book that lays out all the evidence, I mean, I have the goods. And I have more evidence now. Remember, this new evidence before the Supreme Court that you can find in Appendix C and D, C, for example, that is the Connecticut State FEMA own schedule showing they had the drill on their own schedule. And especially Appendix E, Brian Davidson's research into the photo archives of the Connecticut State Police, that's all new evidence for the court. Not presented in any court before. And new legal arguments I had about the Seventh Amendment that I've been describing to you as by virtue of peculiarities of history. The Seventh Amendment has never been affirmed as applying to all 50 states. Well, this is now teed up for the Supreme Court. What else does Carrie Lake has to say? Arizona? It's Carrie Lake. And I want to update you on what's happening in our fight against Arizona's sham election and those who run them. She tells it like it is. For starters, I want you to know that I'm firmly in this fight with you. Maricopa County just couldn't wait to certify their botched election, the botched election where half of Election Day voting centers were inoperable, the botched election where Election Day printers caused mayhem across the country. The county, the botched election where Arizonans were expected to wait in line 2, 3, 4, even 5 hours simply to exercise their sacred right to vote. Arizonans were told to throw their vote into a drawer where it might ultimately end up in a plastic bin or a trash bag. I'm convinced that's exactly right. Maricopa County, where it took 2 weeks to count, is the poster child for broken botched elections. But if you bring up any of these issues, you are labeled an election denier or a conspiracy theorist. Let me just add, how many reports have I given you that the technique they use is to draw the counting of the ballots so they can figure out how many they have to subtract that were cast for the alternative candidate and how many they need to add to guarantee their preferred candidate? That's what's going on. Thus, one of my commentators, I think it may have been Wayne Allen Root, said, if your election isn't called that night, then you're toast. Because they're going to drag it out. They're going to use this extended counting period to change the ballots. It even turns out these Dominion machines are designed so that they can reprint a ballot and change the vote. So if, even if you had a ballot that you submitted that had all your candidates, and suppose hypothetically they were all Republican, the machine could take your ballot and reprint it and make it all Democrat. I mean, it's simple, easy as pie. And remember, the Biden admin was boasting about intervening in the election in Brazil. Intervening in the election in Brazil. Even the head of the CIA went down and talked to Bolsonaro, the head of the CIA. If we're going to intervene in the election in Brazil, why the hell wouldn't we intervene in the election right here, which can keep the powers in position that are destroying the nation? And now Mike Adams, I think, has laid out what their agenda. They want to use this WHO treaty that gives the World Health Organization authority to impose policies worldwide. In the face of a pandemic, they can impose lockdowns, mask mandates, vaccination mandates worldwide if this treaty were to be approved. God forbid that should happen. Because if that does, we are all toast. And I'm telling you, Americans are just so willing to give credence. Then I think Mike Adams got it exactly right. If they got a cover story, they got a fraud. If they're going to tell you these people are health workers, are here to help you, it would not get the armed resistance that would decimate a UN force that came in here, no matter whether under cover of law or not, by the most armed nation in the world. I mean, the founding fathers knew what they were doing when they created a republic of citizen soldiers. That was the whole point of the Second Amendment. that every citizen of the United States should be armed and thereby have the means to come to the aid of the nation in distress, to repel a foreign invader, or to overthrow a tyrannical government. Many believe we're right at that point now, that this will come to pass. And remember, the founding fathers weren't just talking about military-style weapons. They were talking about military weapons. So when Biden goes on another rampage about AR-15s, falsely calling them assault rifles, which implies they're fully automatic when they're only semi, and all this other happy horseshit based upon the Q event, where this appears to have been another abandoned club, just as a Pulse, where the permit for the Pulse ran out 3 years in advance. Just like Sandy Hook, just like Parkland, just like Las Vegas, just like Buffalo, just like Uvalde. These are all phony, fake, false, fabricated, bullshit. Bullshit. Don't let yourself be played. This is another reason you might want to check in to my False Flags and Conspiracy virtual conference. And again, you go to jameshfetzer.org and check it out. Go right to the events, right to events on the menu bar, and check out for False Flags and Conspiracy Conference 2022. This is one I think you do not want to miss. Meanwhile, we're going to take calls during the final segment. The number, of course, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air, and we'll talk about what's on your mind.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, as I mentioned, we've opened the phone lines, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. You're welcome to call in. I have other reports to give you about what's going on in Europe, in Ukraine, and so forth. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev warned NATO not to provide Ukraine with Patriot anti-aircraft batteries and called the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, a criminal entity. I think he's got it right. If, as NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has hinted, NATO supplies Ukrainian fanatics with Patriot systems along with NATO personnel, they would immediately become a legitimate target for our armed forces. Russia is trying to make the United States understand that Washington's growing involvement in the conflict in Ukraine poses increasing risks. Observe the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister, Sergei Rybakov, according to Russian news sources. Moscow has repeatedly said Western military support for Ukraine is prolonging the conflict, now in its 10th month, while creating the risk of possible direct confrontation between Russia and the West. We are sending signals to the Americans that their line of escalation and even deeper involvement in this conflict is fraught with dire consequences. The risks are increasing, Rybakov said, according to the Interfax news agency. He's quoted, "There's no dialogue between Washington and Moscow, but that the two sides occasionally exchange signals. He's unaware of any contact through a special U.S.-Russian military red line." That's a hotline, a phone line, set up during the launch of what Moscow called a special military operation. The North Atlantic Alliance, in whose countries no more than 12% of humanity resides, does not need to exist and should be dissolved as a criminal entity. This opinion was also expressed by the Deputy Chairman of the Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, on Tuesday, November 29th, yesterday. According to him, since its creation, NATO has repeatedly demonstrated its strictly closed corporate nature, acting in the interests of the Anglo-Saxon countries and their allies. At the same time, no more than 12% of the world's population lives in NATO countries. The civilized world does not need this organization. He, speaking, I think, of Biden specific or Zelensky, He must repent before humanity and dissolve as a criminal entity, expressing certainty that even this is a priest who would not be able to forgive their sins. I think this is actually directed at the Vatican. As a vice president of the Security Council pointed out, NATO representatives easily forget the coup their organization carried out around the world, the deposed legitimately elected heads of state, the tens of thousands of murdered civilians, as well as the provision of weapons of all kinds of scum, zoological degenerates and extremist regimes, and the input and the impunity of the alliance leaders for the atrocities they've committed. He also drew attention to the words of NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg about maintaining Ukraine as a sovereign independent state. But he said nothing about its territorial integrity. Somehow, she will win, but apparently within the news, very limited independence. Meanwhile, Russian agency, there's a growing conflict between Ukrainian and Polish soldiers, civil war in the ranks of the Ukrainian army. Increasing complaints by Ukrainian soldiers about the privileges enjoyed by Polish mercenaries fighting next to them in the front are said by intelligence services of the Russian forces fighting in the province of Luhansk. Andrei Marchenko, an official in the army of the Luhansk People's Republic, said, citing information from the intelligence services, that Ukrainian soldiers are increasingly resentful of the better conditions enjoyed by Polish mercenaries. There is a growing conflict between Ukrainian soldiers and Polish mercenaries serving in the Ukrainian armed forces. Despite relatively identical tenure conditions, Poles have many advantages over Ukrainians. The Poles receive extra money due to donations on top of their fixed pay, while Western sponsors send them large quantities of equipment and special equipment, while the Ukrainians pay for it all out of their own pockets. In addition, Poles speak arrogantly and treat Ukrainians as inferior, pointing out that these are parameters that increase the discontent of the Ukrainians, who very often end up fighting or even exchanging gunfire with the Poles. Here's another commission bombshell statement. The Ukrainian army has collapsed, 100,000 dead, 200,000 injured. Special court against Russia announced. A storm of reaction inside and outside Ukraine was caused by statements by the head of the commission, Ursula von der Leyen, who revealed more than 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers and 20,000 civilians have been killed so far. The numbers given by Ursula von der Leyen are completely identical with the estimates of the Russian Ministry of Defense and the last report of the Ukrainians of 4 months ago. So the number is now going to be greatly over those reported here. If the dead are now over 100,000, then the wounded Ukrainian soldier must be over 200,000, possibly 250,000, I would say 300,000 or more. This means that Russia has wiped out an entire army of 300,000 men, which shows what's happening on the battlefield. Immediately after her statement, Ursula von der Leyen quickly deleted the tweet and released new video without reference to the number of dead Ukrainians. At the same time, in a dangerous development, the president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, proposed the creation of a special court with the support of the United Nations to investigate and prosecute the crime of Russian aggression in Ukraine. But the fact of the matter is, it's the Ukrainians who are committing the atrocities, not the Russians. Here we have a tweet from Ursula von der Leyen. Russia must pay for its horrific crimes. We will work with the ICC and help set up a specialized court to try Russia's crimes. No doubt a rigged court. With our partners, we'll make sure that Russia pays for the devastation it caused. with the frozen funds of oligarchs and assets of its central banks, and more than 100,000 Ukrainian military, it says here, officers have been killed so far. Well, that's pretty damn significant, I dare say. Mitchell, given we don't seem to have any callers, I'd most welcome thoughts and comments of yours about the issues we've been discussing here on the show today. Your thoughts, my friend.
Well, Jim, it certainly is a circus out here. There's no doubt about that.
Have you heard of this Supreme Court case contesting the election of 2020?
No, I hadn't. No.
If that makes any headway, obviously that could be very significant. I think the case with Arizona is so clear-cut. But the question becomes, do we have a viable judiciary in the United States? I mean, if we had an honest Department of Justice, they would have been all over this already. But in the Biden administration, the FBI and the DOJ are so corrupt, they are so weaponized politically, they're not going to raise their least digit to correct corrupt voting practices that benefit the Democrats and keep them in power. It is disgusting, Mitchell.
Yeah, Jim, it's not looking good. I just missed Paul a minute ago. I'm bringing him back in. I'm sorry. But, yeah, I'm getting to you, Paul. Don't yell at me. But, yeah, these are perilous times. You know, just because our constitutional republic has been so bent out of shape.
Paul, if you're here, join the conversation.
I did call just a little bit ago. I wasn't sure if you were taking calls. I didn't really hear you say that. I was bouncing back a little back and forth between RBN and your show. So, but I heard you earlier in your show and you were going over the Sandy Hook case and so on. And I don't know if I made this exact point before, but, it struck me again in my mind as I'm listening to you lay this out. And, and I wonder, this thing to me, and I want to say these words to you, but I don't really mean them in this way. I said, don't you know, or haven't you figured out yet? I don't really mean it like that, but. It's not the world that we think exists. I mean, it's like a Twilight Zone or an Outer Limits episode. And I really do think that's the hardest thing for people to accept. I mean, what you're finding out, Jim, and you may not look at it this way, but I've looked at it this way quite a while, is like all those TV shows. Of course, I mentioned the two prominent ones, the Twilight Zone, the Outer Limits, but there were others that were telling you, I'm thinking also maybe The Prisoner, Doctor Who, these sorts of shows that were letting us know in not so subtle ways that the reality that they tell us exists doesn't really exist. And just so many topics illustrate this point. And of course, your case on Sandy Hook is perfect. I mean, yeah, obviously you have an amazing mind and intellect. You're able to grasp, legal concepts as well as, scientific concepts, philosophy, all these different things you can incorporate, probably unlike the majority of people. And yet, you walked into a forum or a venue where, they suspended it's kind of like, that paper that came out originally about 9/11 where I remember reading it online. It was Muslims suspend the laws of physics.
Yes.
And, this is a hard thing to accept, to wrap your mind around. You're talking about the elections in Arizona and Kerry Lake and, this Kathy Hobbs character and so forth. And this is a prime example of the fact that, we're living in an illusion. And, by the way, just related to this, this also jumped across my mind when I was listening earlier. Have you ever seen or heard of Lloyd Pye and his work, Everything You Know Is Wrong? You ever heard that, Jim?
I've heard of, it's a book, right? Everything You Know Is Wrong or Everything You've Learned Is Wrong. Yeah, I've heard of it, but I've not read it. Paul, tell us more.
Well, you know, you don't need to read it if you want. You just go on YouTube, and I know you won't do it. I've given you so many recommendations over the years, and I think you've done very few of them. I have to keep reminding you. But there's a YouTube video by the same title, Everything You Know Is Wrong, Lloyd Pye. And it's basically about human origins. And it's really an amazing presentation. He makes, in my opinion, a very convincing case, and some might even say definitive, that, you know, we came or we were manipulated by outsiders or aliens, you know, people that they refer to as the Anunnaki. They manipulated our genetics, our DNA, to create, you know, who we are today, which is a kind of a hybrid between them and the earthly anthropods. So it's a fascinating theory. And again, it would be an entertaining watch for you. And he also confirms for me, in my opinion, the existence of Bigfoot, or, you know, in other parts of the world, what they know as a Yeti, that this is not just a legend, but there has been and still is real physical evidence of their existence that's being kept from us. So, again, I just don't think that almost anything is what we think it is. The world, as we've been led to believe, unfortunately, doesn't really exist. It's like a movie or a TV show. And you walked into a little reality television with your court case. Anyway, I just had those thoughts earlier.
Well, that's all good stuff, Paul. And of course, I'm testing the system to see if it is actually as corrupt as we have been led to believe by past experience. I'm not naive about the ultimate outcome. I'm simply doing my best to present a rock solid case that ought to be a severe test of the Supreme Court. It's just like a reader in a book. The reaction to a book is as much a test of the reader as it is of the book. And you can have a classic book and a reader who, say, doesn't like it, which is reflective on them rather than upon the book. Now, we'll just see how it plays out. But I think this is as good a severe test of the integrity of the United States Supreme Court today as they could possibly confront. As far as Yeti is concerned, I have a friend, Mike Palachuk, who actually had a direct physical confrontation with a Yeti, and he's written about it. In fact, if you read the introduction to Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, Mike goes a bit far afield to talk about his experience with issues that are generally contested and disputed, about which he has personal experience. So I'm totally open to that. I'm even totally open to the visitations by extraterrestrials to Earth. I was sent a short video, and I've been trying to find it because it's somewhere on my desktop. Small grays, and they look a whole lot like the figure in E.T., and I have no reason to think that it's fake, though it obviously could be fake. I just don't have a good reason at this point to think it is fake. Now, on the other hand, the question about the origin of life on Earth, I've actually published on this. You know, I published the book entitled The Evolution of Intelligence. It has a companion called Render Unto Darwin. Those are very complimentary works. But a point I make, it would make to you about this, and we have it with Eric Von Doniggan in his Worlds in Collision, the idea that Earth is populated by ancient astronauts. The question becomes, well, where then came the ancient astronauts? From even earlier, more ancient astronauts, and before them, even earlier ancient astronauts? In other words, you have to have an origin for these life forms at some point,
okay,
or you're led into,
Paul,
just let me finish and I'll bring you back, or you're led into a regress. It's simpler, in my judgment, to account for evolution as having occurred on Earth, where I've actually more or less tracked the development of consciousness and mentality correlated with primitive forms of life on Earth. So go ahead, Paul. Yeah, go ahead. We got Brian. We'll bring him in.
Okay, so again, the show is closing. There's no time. I hate it when you bring these broad subjects, these deep subjects up in the closing minutes. It's frustrating to me.
I wasn't talking about,
I know, but you're talking about.
Go ahead.
Okay, but Okay.
Paul, we can continue the conversation.
Stop. I'm trying to talk.
Yeah.
Please. Okay, so you're talking about the origins of life, right? And this is not anything that I brought up. And it's nothing that we can solve in an hour or so. I mean, the whole idea, what most people talk about with evolution, or what they believe they think they're talking about, but they're not really willing to draw the distinction, is that life either came from life or it came from non-life. I don't think it can have it both ways. So, you know, the idea that you just talked about there, I can sum up with what I've always said is, okay, you came from your parents, and they came from their parents, and they came from their parents. So at what point in time did they come from something that was not human or that was not living? So this is a big problem, okay? There's no evidence at all that life comes from non-life. So the question becomes very interesting, well, okay, where did life come from? This is what I call the great unanswerable question. And you can't – nobody has successfully postulated this and argued it to any what I call conclusive or definitive proof. And believe me, I've heard, read, and listened to many, many arguments along this discussion. So, but I didn't want to get into that. But again, yeah. I would love to flesh it out on a much longer show where we can talk about many of the different people, what they said. By the way, Worlds in Collision was Velikovsky, and Eric von Däniken is a very interesting fellow, and I don't think he's wrong. He might not necessarily be exactly correct on all the artifacts and the things that he brings out. I read his book.
Several. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, and he's a very interesting fellow. I don't think any of us know the answer. And my quick response to, you know, you're talking about this is going to be a test of, you know, the Supreme Court, or a test to see how corrupt it is. You know, we both know it's not any test. They're gonna show you the door and say, thanks for coming. You know, all your evidence is correct. The law is correct, but we're not really going to hear it, more than likely.
Well, we should know already by Monday. I should know whether they've accepted it and issued a writ or not. So it's an easily testable hypothesis. No, I actually heard a symposium by Eric von Däniken and shook the guy's hand, you know, just so I could say I'd done it. But life obviously came from non-life, Paul. We can talk about that at greater length on another day. But it has to have. Let me bring in Brian. Brian, go ahead, add your thoughts.
Yeah, Paul blows my mind because he's always so spot on with things. When he brought up Bigfoot, you know, I'm the one that does all this kundalini every day, and I bring down light from the central sun, and I get beings. I'll have fairies show up, and they're putting their palms out, and they're bringing the light down. They need the light. Well, it shocked me. I had Bigfoot showing up. I had all these Bigfoot creatures showing up, all hairy. And this is, of course, is a non-physical, and they've got their palms out, and I give them all kinds of diksha, and they're explaining things to me about what they do or what they used to do. And so he's spot on. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, well, Paul will accept that. I'm very confident.
I've never had
Paul is amazing. I wish I knew his last name. I could tell Paul who he is, because his consciousness level and the purity of his knowledge is just unbelievable. You don't run into people like that.
Paul, you got a fan.
Well, I bless Brian. Thank you. Just contact Jim. And he'll give you my, my contact info, my email, and it has my last name in it, so you'll know. And
do all that stuff. It won't allow me. If I try and do any email, it shuts me off. I try and talk to Louise on Goldfish Report, and the computer will not let me do it. So anyway,
okay. Louise, here was what I would love to say though in the closing moments, just to butt heads a little bit with Jim. You know, I've got nothing but respect for Jim and the work that he has done. But I just don't think anybody in this life, in this world, can make the statement that, oh, we know that life came from non-life. It's just not a supportable statement, and I take issue with it. I'm sure you do as well, Brian.
But
you're right, Paul, because there is no such thing as time. Everything is in the now. there is no time. So if there is no time, then you can't have a situation where there is no life.
Well, I don't want to just say the idea that there was always life is silly, but the idea that there was always life is silly, and therefore life had to come from non-life. And if you could believe in a divine creator, I mean, this is part of the appeal of religion. To appeal to a divine creator creates life where there was, where it did not exist, in particular human life. But, Paul, we'll just save that for another occasion. We are going to find out what the Supreme Court does with my case. It's going to be in conference on Friday. I'm going to be preoccupied with the false flag and conspiracy conference over the weekend. 24 speakers, 26 presentations. Anyone who might want to catch it, go to jameshfetzer.org and look on the menu bar for events, and then you can click on False Flags and Conspiracies Virtual Conference 2022, and you can learn more about it. And then Monday, I should already, I think, have the decision of the court on whether they're going to issue a writ of certiorari or not, and I'm hoping they will, because it'll be just such a wonderful birthday present, since the following day, Tuesday the 6th, is my 82nd birthday, Paul. So there we have it. It's quite a sequence. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, boom, 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 boom. And someday, yeah, we'll talk about, you know, the origin of life, et cetera. Those are all great questions you raised. And Brian, among others, is very appreciative, and I know he's not alone. You have a lot of fans, my friend. Meanwhile, let me just encourage everyone to spend as much time as they can with their friends and people they love, because with all these things going on, and I think Mike Adams has a big picture laid out, we do not know how much time we have left. Spend it wisely.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...